you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Chad Wallace,
dog.
Man, you crazy.
Dolphins? Buccaneers, dog.
Cowboys?
I'm talking about the Bucks, bro. Welcome to Tampa. Home of the
This is the Pewter Plank Podcast, presented by thepewterplank.com. I'm Ken Bulkey, joined with Leo Howell. And the new uniforms are out, and I'm going to be honest, I love it. I knew I was going to like whatever the new logo was going to be and the new helmet was going to be. I guess uniforms aren't there yet. They're going to be awesome. But the new logo, it's a little bit of a change. I know people are probably yelling at you, telling you it's not a big change, but there is a change. And the new helmet is fantastic. Like it or not, it is. You're going to love it. Wait till they get on the field. Leo, what's your take on the logo and the helmet?
Oh, I love all the changes that they made here. I think that the logo looks better. I know that people are complaining that the skull and crossbones are too cartoony or whatever. That's stupid. It's a logo. It's supposed to be cartoony. Have you seen the Viking lately? Have you seen the Panther lately? That's a ridiculous thing to be mad about. I think it looks great. I think that the new helmet looks great. The new ship logo is awesome. And yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with the uniforms, because I think that there will be some drastic changes there as well. Possibly even removing red as a base color, or adding a third jersey that's not a throwback. Lots of different options there that are pretty exciting to me.
I'm pulling for like a dark pewter base jersey with some pewter pants, and it's basically a full dark pewter jersey where, I don't know, I've always liked the all black look, and this would be even... Yeah. Almost like a slicker look than that. So
yeah, and then they can use the red logos on it, which is something they couldn't really do with the red jersey. They had to like make the logos black, and they didn't look as good. And so yeah.
And that ship logo, you are absolutely correct. Yeah. It is phenomenal.
Awesome.
It is just absolutely excellent. So let's move on to the people wearing those logos. And we're going to talk most of this podcast about a couple different things, mainly the offensive line, and then we're going to get into a little bit of the draft combine and how the Bucks scouting may kind of influence what way they're going to go, what people have done, what people have not done, and we'll go from there. But we're going to start with the offensive line, because recently there's been quite a bit of grumbling about three players in particular: Donald Penn, Davin Joseph, and Carl Nix, all of which are under contract, but all of which are in a situation where the Bucks could get out from underneath the contract without absolutely burying themselves. It wouldn't be great with Nix, but there is a way out. This year, obviously, Nix did not do much. He didn't play much. Penn, I thought, was better than what most people have given him credit for. We'll get into that a little bit more. And then there was Davin Joseph that I think we can all agree really did not come back from the injury very well. And the question is, moving forward, can he be a lot better than last year? And can we get the Davin Joseph we had back? Or is that just what we have now? And basically, do you have to move on from him?
Yeah, that's the point of discussion that needs to be had with Joseph, is that even if you do get Davin Joseph back, do you want it? Davin Joseph was a high draft pick. And he had some flashes and some moments, and he certainly had some good games earlier in his career, but he's always been inconsistent. If you ask Samuel Gurr at Bucks Nation, who's their kind of... Yeah. To me, he is the best offensive line person who talks about the Bucks there is. So I trust him really much, really a lot on this stuff. Really much, whatever. And he's never said that Joseph is some elite player. He's good, mainly because he's a very smart player, but his footwork is awful and inconsistent. He's not getting any younger. He's coming off of being on the IR twice now in his career. And he just posted a disgusting season of, according to Pro Football Focus, which again is just another group of people who evaluate the play of players.
But they do it more statistically than most outlets do. They take numbers into consideration a lot more, which is why I tend to lean on those stats even more than the standard ones.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was among guards who played 16 games. He was by far the worst. The next closest guard who played 16 games was Paul Fanica of the Cardinals, who was a full 6 points better than him. And then ahead of that, The next worst right guard was Dan Connolly from New England, who, in terms of guys who played 16 games, and he was 22 points on their grading system better. Like 22 points is the difference between Evan Mathis, the best guard in the league, and Matt Slauson, who was the sixth. Like, that's the difference from, like, all-pro to, like, barely a Pro Bowler. And I know that it doesn't exactly match up all the way, but basically what that's saying is like, he was actively bad all year to the point where he's down at literally 80th out of 81 guards who played 25% of their team snaps. And where he lost most of his grade, and actually he was the very worst in the league at it, was as a run blocker. He graded out as a negative 27 using their grading system as a run blocker. His pass blocking actually wasn't quite that bad. It was still in the negatives. It's just bad. The numbers were bad. His performance was bad. You could kind of see it on the field. Teams could attack him. Teams could exploit him on the offensive line. And he's just getting paid too much to justify that.
So let's just get into straight numbers. As far as the cap goes, how bad of a hit and how bad would it be if they basically just said, we're done with him, moving on?
For Joseph, there is no hit at all. He has no guarantees. He has no bonuses. He has no signing bonus.
So basically, it's a free get out of jail free card, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. If they walked up to Davin Joseph right now and shook his hand and said sorry, but we're going to have to let you go, it does is freeze up $6 million of cap space.
And what it also does is it frees up another place on that line. It is going to allow for some movement. I know that earlier you had been discussing with on Twitter about possibly moving Penn over to a guard position. I don't know that that's necessarily the best idea.
It's not.
You kind of came to that conclusion as well. But I think you're probably right that Davin deserved his chance to come back last year after the injury. It was a bad injury. It was one that took him out for an entire season, and we thought it was really devastating at the time. It winds up that it kind of was, in that fact that they didn't play well either of the last 2 years, really. Better 2 years ago than this year. But now I think there's almost no choice but to move on, because the numbers were just brutal and it wasn't getting better. The thing that for me, I did power rankings for the Bucks mostly through the season, was that Davin was a guy that consistently week after week, you were like, maybe he's going to get better because he's getting healthier. And it just didn't happen throughout the season. And he just consistently wasn't doing what he needed to be doing to even really deserve a spot on the roster. So for me, this is a spot where Jason Light has an opportunity to say, you know what, I'm the new general manager, we're going to start making some changes, and to prove it to you, this is a guy that a lot of you thought was safe. He's not, and he's gone, and now your job might be at risk too.
Yeah, I mean, according to Pro Football Focus, his grades got better as the season went on, but even still, he was below average by the end of the season. And so at the very least, he cannot make what he is scheduled to make next season. If you think that there's potential that he can take a step forward and that he can resume to where he was, which he was drafted in 2006, he's born in 1983. So he's on the wrong side of 30 now, and he's heading in the wrong direction coming off of a major injury. If you think somehow that all that translates into a guy who can improve, which I think there's a mountain of evidence that says he's not guaranteed to really improve all that much, if all you think he can do is get back to league average-ish, he needs to make less than half of what he's making now to have a fair contract.
And is that reasonable to ask him to do that?
I think it is. I really think it is, just because the reality of the situation is you're going to be able to sit down with him and say, look, Davin, unfortunately, this is part of the business part of this. We're either going to have to ask you to take less money or cut you. So if you want to stay in Tampa, we'll be more than happy to work out a deal for you. We'll guarantee a year of your salary so that you know that you've at least got something. Let's just say we'll just scrap the old deal and say like 2 years, $2.5 million, and we'll give you $1 million as a guarantee in that first year. As opposed to saying, just cut him because he's not good. Because there's always room for a guy who's a team leader and is a veteran and does have ability. He's not an unskilled player. He's just been disappointing in the way he's played due to injuries and age and just some frustrating inconsistencies. At the very worst, I don't think you can go wrong with having Davin Joseph as a backup, even if you're overpaying him a little bit for that role. Because if you just bring in somebody to play right guard and he beats Davin fair and square, I don't think it's the end of the world if you've got Davin sitting on your bench on a much smaller contract than what he's making now.
And that's going to say a lot about what Jason Light's plans are coming in here, is that there is a big-time salaried player that I wouldn't say that he's a guy that Buccaneer fans are, like, grasping onto. He's not Vincent Jackson. He's not somebody like that where it's like, oh, my God, you can't get rid of that guy. If the Bucs cut Davin Joseph tomorrow, nobody's going to freak out that much. Obviously, it's the offseason. We all go nuts about everything. But I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. However, I think you're right that the better scenario is to find a way to come up with a new deal, keep him here, because there is a chance that you can make that price tag a little bit lower based on the fact that he's been here the entire career.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he came over and that he can move on. He's never moved other than when he came into the league. So you're right. Having him as a backup wouldn't be a bad thing. And also having that competition and pushing him during the entire offseason through training camp would be a good thing. And if he wins the job, then guess what? You got a guy who used to get paid a lot more, getting paid substantially less now, and he might well perform at that high-paying level that where he got that contract in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly with the uncertainty about Carl Nix at the other guard position and the versatility of a guy like Zutaw to move around. Having a guy at right guard who's capable of stepping in and at least giving you average-ish performance is good. And you're not guaranteed to get someone who's going to replace Davin Joseph, even if Davin Joseph isn't playing up to his standards, because it's not like you're guaranteed to get some guy in free agency or guaranteed to get some guy in the draft who's going to be better. There's no assurances there. So I won't be hurt if Davin Joseph is cut, because as much as he's definitely a leader on the team and a good guy in the community, his foundation and everything definitely do some good things. I don't think that that's enough to say that you have to keep him, that you have to show this level of loyalty to him. But at the same time, I don't want to see him just go just for the sake of going, just to send a message. Like you said, I think that there's an equal statement in saying, if you're not making what, or if you're not performing up to what you're making, we're going to make some changes. Like, you're not going to coast by just because, you know, you've been with this team forever. And Davin may not want to go. He may not want to hit the open market. That may be something where if Jason Light presents him with that opportunity, that may be something that he wants, is to, you know, just secure staying in Tampa versus risking hitting the open market when, you know, teams watched him last year. And I doubt that anyone's going to break the bank on him. There may be a team that gives him a slightly better deal because they think he can return to what he was. But, I think that, like you said, it's a real good chance for Jason Light to show what he plans to do, how he plans to mold the roster with Lovie Smith. And you had mentioned that there may be a lot of turnover. And if truly what they want to do is just to kind of rebuild this offense, then they may just cut him and just move on and say, that's a part of what this offense was, and we don't want that anymore. But I think, like you said, it would be wise to have a guy who you know can do things at the NFL level and would at least provide competition and a veteran presence in the locker room.
And the Bucs are in a situation that's a little bit different than what they were in the past, where I don't think they need to be sending messages. You're coming off of a regime, and I call it a regime because that's basically what it was, with Schiano, where messages were a big part of what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
He wanted to send messages to people. He wanted to have his voice heard loud and clear in every single situation. We know that's not Lovie. We don't know much about Jason Light because Jason Light's never had this position. Lovie has. That's not Lovie's style. Lovie's style is more the fatherly, make you feel disappointed, I think what's happening with Mike Williams.
Yeah, we were just discussing that. We were just discussing that before the podcast, is that Mike Williams goes through all this off-the-field stuff, and a few days later, we see him on Instagram posting a picture of him going to a local children's hospital and hanging out with kids who have terminal diseases. Like, that's the kind of thing that Lovie Smith is going to do. He's not going to just say, okay, Aqib Talib, I don't like you, you're going to New England. It's, okay, Mike Williams, you're acting like a dumb child, but like you said, I'm going to take a fatherly role. I'm going to work through this with you. If you keep on betraying me and betraying my trust, then we'll have issues. But here's your chance to change your personality, to change what you've been doing, because we think that you can be a productive part of this team.
So let's move on to Carl Nix. Obviously, Carl Nix last season, out most of the season with the injuries and the battle with MRSA. We're hoping that that's gone and that that's not going to be a case. However, the injuries to his legs are still a problem. So what would be the right scenario for you moving forward with Carl Nix?
the situation with Carl Nixon, and I got specific details on this from Joel Corey, who's a former agent, and he's now a writer for places like CBS, and he just does a lot of salary cap stuff. I tweeted at him, and I asked him specifically, what's going to happen if the Bucks let go of Carl Nixon? If they don't, during the offseason, there's a bunch of dumb rules that they've come up with in the CBA for whatever reason. If they designate him as a June 1st or July 1st, one of those two, cut, they'll save $1 million in cap space this season, which sounds like, oh, cool, save $1 million. That also means that there's $6 million of dead money that they're not going to get to use, which is extremely frustrating to me. I don't want to see them do that. If they don't designate him as a June 1st cut, they actually lose cap space, like a net loss of cap space, that not only do they have to pay against the cap everything he's making this year, but then some in addition, just because of the way that his contract is structured right now. So if he's not going to play, if it's found out that he's not going to play, then they need to work on some injury settlement with him and let him go that way. Otherwise, there's no reason to cut him on a performance-based thing. When he played last year, he was good. He played every snap in two games, and he was good. He didn't have a great game against New England, but he was good enough. And then against Arizona, he was very good, doing what he always does. He's a mauler. He's a run blocker. He's capable as a pass protector. He's just a big, strong dude who gets things done as a guard. And letting him go is giving the opportunity for another team to get a guard that you cannot get a better version of. There are very few players in this league who are better than Carl Nix at the guard position. So I think that doing anything to Carl Nix except for just letting him work his way back and working with the doctors and finding out if he should retire or not, that's the only way that I say get rid of Carl Nix, is if he's ready to call it quits because his injuries are too bad. Anything else, you need to keep him, even if he's going to sit out a few games next season, because he is too good to let go of, and the contract situation just does not benefit them enough to cut him. If you want to save money, if you want to save $1 million, cut Connor Barth, cut Michael Kanan. Those guys save more money by being cut, and they play much less premium positions that are easier to replace, whereas with a guy like Nix, you're not going to get anybody to replace him, and that position is more important than some of these other guys who can be cut and save similar amounts of cap space.
Carl Nix has just been a frustrating character to certainly the fans, and I'm sure to the organization as a whole. Just the fact that we can't seem to get him on the field to save our lives here, and it's disappointing because, like you said, when he plays, we know he's good. He's been good his whole career. You know, if he plays 16 games, he's going to be borderline Pro Bowler. I mean, that's the guy he is, and it's unfortunate because when they signed him, that's what we thought we had, and we've never had it for more than a couple games in a row, and it's really disappointing. I agree with you. Cutting him's not the right decision right now, certainly because monetarily, it just doesn't really make sense. It doesn't save you enough. It starts putting you into dead money, which is one thing the Bucks do really well and have done really well, is they just don't do that. They just don't have a lot of dead money on the cap. Very rarely do they have to do it. And usually when they do it, it's pretty obvious why it winds up happening. I think Kellen Winslow's one that specifically jumps out to me.
Yeah, and that was even before this recent run of a few good years of actually improving the team. There's no dead money on the cap right now, and there wasn't last year.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And really rare. I mean, I don't think that's a common theme, especially in the division that the Bucks play in, because there's a team just north of us in Carolina, which is like dead money central.
Yeah, definitely. And the Raiders had been struggling with that. And definitely, you know, there are some egregious instances in the NFL of teams that just have tons of dead money. And it's an issue for them. According to Over the Cap, the Bills have $12 million, the Panthers have $17 million, the Cardinals have $10 million, the Saints have $10 million, the Cowboys have $11 million, the Buccaneers have $139,000.
Amazing.
There's
and the Bucks are way under the cap too, so it's not like they're right up against it. They have a plenty of room to make some things happen.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they can make happen is not cut a player where you just don't know what you're going to get.
Absolutely.
Carl Nix is that player.
Absolutely, yeah. There are actually one of three teams who have less than the NFL minimum salary in dead money. Every other team has at least one player's minimum salary held against the cap. Like, every other team is paying an NFL player's worth of salary in money that they can't use. The Jets, the Rams, and the Bucks are the only three teams that don't have that situation. The Jets, surprisingly enough, for as much of a mess as they are, after they got rid of all the Revis stuff, they actually have less than $50,000 in dead money, which is incredible to me because it seems like they just have such a mess on the books. But they've got Idzik on board now, and he's definitely doing a better job of running things. But yeah, no, it makes no sense. They're not in a situation to go out of their way to create cap space by letting go of guys that is just going to hurt the cap in a way that does not provide a net benefit. Releasing a talented player and not creating a ton of cap space, it's a lose-lose. There's no winning there for the Bucks.
Yeah, it simply doesn't make sense. And it's something that under the previous general manager with Mark Domenech, we pretty much knew what he was going to do. We had him for long enough. We pretty much had an idea. And I think had Mark Domenech been here, we all could have pretty much guaranteed said, yeah, I don't think he's going to do it. I don't think Carl Nix is going anywhere. And we also probably would have said, I think they will find something to do with Davin Joseph. Again, because Jason Light's new, because Jason Light has never been in this position, we really don't know. We can kind of look at what he's done with the Cardinals and even his time in New England, but it's really hard to determine whether he was in on the decisions or not. So it is going to be interesting to see what they do, not only with the players on the roster, but then how they attack free agency, because he does have quite a bit of open room to make some moves. And I don't think the Glazers are necessarily like not wanting to write checks. I think the Glazers want a winning team again, and they're ready to do it. And if they have to pay for it, they're willing to do it. So hopefully that is the case. Let's move on to the last lineman that we were going to talk about, and that is Donald Penn. Donald Penn, a guy that for whatever reason is under a lot of fire. I don't really understand it personally because I don't think he's that bad, and I don't think he's a problem. I don't think he was a reason why this team was so bad last year. If you follow Donald Penn on Twitter, he's wondering the same thing, and that's actually quite an interesting read if you have some time. Just scroll down his timeline and listen to all the people giving him good words and then his confusion of why people don't like him. I'm with him. I don't get it, but there is a lot of fire with Donald Penn, and there are even discussions about letting him go or moving on from him, which to me is a little bit nuts. Let me hear your take on that.
Yeah, I was discussing this today, and specifically, my take on Donald Penn is releasing him before the draft is maybe the biggest mistake that the Bucks could make, because this draft does have some offensive tackles who are worthwhile, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's no reason, similar to Nix, there's no reason to release Donald Penn anytime until you're sure you have someone better. And that's easier to do with Penn. Penn is not an elite player. Carl Nix is an elite player. You're not going to find somebody better than Carl Nix. The Saints aren't going to trade us either of their other guards that they replaced Nix with. Like, we're not going to get Ben Grubbs or Dari Evans. Like, that's not going to happen. We're not going to get Evan Mathis from the Eagles. Whereas a tackle, there are guys out there who are better. The question then becomes, what kind of value are you getting from these guys? Yeah, Penn wasn't at his best last year, but he also wasn't bad, and Pro Football Focus supports that. He was the 30th tackle, but that includes right tackles as well, which means he's right about league average, because there's 64 tackles in the league, and actually there were 76 who played at least 25% of their team's snaps, so he was above average in that regard. He was a pretty good run blocker. He avoided penalties. His issue was pass blocking. He did give up more sacks than he has in the past, and that's frustrating for Buck fans to see. But one thing you also have to realize there is that other than the teams that have mobile quarterbacks, the Bucks had the quarterback who held on to the football longer than any quarterback not named Nick Foles. Because the mobile quarterbacks, obviously, they hold on to the ball more because they roll out of the pocket and they can run around. Nick Foles and then Mike Glennon were the two quarterbacks who held on to the football the longest this season. That makes it tougher on a guy like Donald Penn. Josh Freeman didn't hold on to the ball as long as Mike Glennon did. And that was a change for Penn. And that's something that he had to adjust to. And we saw flashes where he was still capable. He shut down Robert Quinn for 2.5 quarters. And then eventually, Mike Glennon's just holding on to the ball for 15 seconds. And there's nothing Penn can do. Penn also didn't have as good of help on the inside as he could have. Without Carl Nix, he had a ragtag bunch of left guards to his inside. And that's going to impact how he plays. Is he... is Penn some future of the franchise guy that they need to make sure that they hold on to forever? No, he's not. It's not going to kill the cap to let go of him. He's got a little bit of a signing bonus to where there would be like $200,000 in dead money, but it's really not a big deal. That's totally forgivable if you want to cut him or whatever. But he's getting paid at league average for left tackle, and he's a league average left tackle. I don't see why there's this outrage to get rid of a guy who's getting paid for what he's doing, and you don't know if you're going to be able to get somebody to replace him. Just punching holes in the roster makes absolutely no sense. If you know that you're going to get a tackle in the draft, wait until you get a tackle in the draft and then cut him afterwards or trade him afterwards. Somebody may give you a sixth-round pick for him. There is no reason to cut him now. This isn't like Gabe Kareem or Derek Landry where you just know they're not going to be a part of your plans. Donald Penn is the starting left tackle next season until something changes. And so there's no reason to punch a hole in the offensive line that doesn't need to be punched, particularly when there are two positions where there are legitimate concerns as to whether this guy will be here next year.
And we've discussed it in the past that there is going to be some roster turnover, and we expect there to be quite a bit of roster turnover, but that does not mean take good players and get rid of them. That does not mean take players that make sense to keep and get rid of them because you're trying to turn things over. I don't think that's the plan Jason Light's going for. Yes, there are going to be a lot of different players. Yes, the 53-man roster, there may only be 30 guys on that roster that are still there from last year.
If
that's
yeah.
changing the roster. Right. It could even be less. But that doesn't mean you take players like a Donald Penn who even – the point I have with Donald Penn is that you need to find enough improvement versus the risk of getting rid of him. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a risky player to have, and that's a risky position to tinker with.
Yes.
Left tackle is an important position because if that is a bad position on your team, you have no chance to win in this league. If you have the worst left tackle, you're in trouble unless you have a dominant run game up the middle and to the other side. So for me, it's really risky to move on to him, even though you're right, there are some people in this draft that would fit and that would make sense and that you could probably plug in and get what you expect to be Donald Penn or more. With the possibility of growth, I get that. But the fact is, you're not in a position where that is a giant hole on your offense and that is a giant hole on your team, which there are teams in that situation. So to me, moving on from him basically puts a question mark in a spot that would be kind of just a dash, where if I put a plus or a minus or an NA, I would say NA, I don't really think anything about that position. It's not good. It's not terrible. It's not really something I'm going to worry about. We're not going to dominate there, but it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
If you move on and put something different there, yes, it becomes a question mark. Even if it's a guy we get from another team that you know kind of what you're going to get, the fact is you don't know how he's going to fit in. So it makes me nervous to get rid of Donald Penn, especially off probably his worst year in a while.
Absolutely, and to address that point specifically, a lot of people are pointing to Brandon Albert as a possible replacement for Donald Penn. Let's just address some facts real quick about Brandon Albert. First of all, he's a year and a half younger than Donald Penn. That's not a long-term solution. He's going to turn 30 this season. Penn is 31 or 32 this season. It's not some huge upgrade in terms of getting some youthful prospect. The worst thing about Brandon Albert that makes this completely ridiculous, he's played 16 games in a season once in his career. You can't have that from a left tackle. That's not acceptable for a left tackle. A left tackle needs to be out there every single week because, like you said, it's a very important position, and people are coming up with studies now that say that the right tackle is pretty important too, and that's fine, and we've got a good one of those. The Bucs have a good right tackle. Left tackle is still important because it's still the blind side of most quarterbacks, unless you're left-handed, obviously, and if the Bucs get a left-handed quarterback, then that changes things. But assuming that there's a right-handed quarterback, left tackle is a very important position, and having to replace it for 4 weeks a year, which is what you have to do with Albert historically, is 2 to 4 weeks a year. You need someone else there. That's a big deal. Because last year, who would have played left tackle if Donald Penn didn't? Gabe Kareemi? Ugh. That's scary. That's really scary. That's not good. That's not what you want. That's not ideal. You want your left tackle to be out there, and that's what Donald Penn does. He goes out, and even at this advanced stage in his career, at his advanced age, being quote-unquote overweight, even though I don't think that he's really all that overweight, I think that that was a thing that kind of got blown out of proportion, just like this Mike Williams thing is. He's a league average guy, and he's getting paid a league average. Going out and signing a free agent in Brandon Albert, who's sought after by two teams that need a left tackle in the Cardinals and the Dolphins, who are going to pay him like a starting left tackle, you're going to have to pay him more than Donald Penn. And let's just go to the Pro Football Focus grades for a second on those two players, and we see that they're two positions apart, and it's not even that significant of a difference. The main difference is that Albert is better against the pass, and Penn is better against the run, and otherwise, you might as well just not even make a difference there, because they're equally graded. They're basically the same in terms of overall level.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said punching holes in a roster that doesn't need holes punched in it. That there's just no reason to make a change when you don't have a clear problem at that position. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a clear problem. I don't think Jason Light will see it as a clear problem.
No.
If he sees a better upgrade and he sees someone that, and I think there are situations where a new general manager can come in and say, you know what? There's a guy on the practice squad of the Cardinals where I came from that's actually really, really good. I know this because I've seen him, or whatever. It's some sort of scouting that is different because he's never been the general manager. He now has that opportunity to make that happen. But the fact is, again, just like we said with Davin Joseph, it doesn't hurt you to have someone come in and beat out Donald Penn or beat out Davin Joseph and wind up having what we call depth in this league, which, as you may or may not know, is important, something the Buccaneers had none of last year, a problem, why they're picking seventh. I'm still disappointed about that. We could be third if they just didn't beat the damn Lions, but I'm never going to get over that. Unless Teddy Bridgewater puts on a Buccaneer jersey, I'm going to have a hard time getting over that for a long time. Or if they pass on him, then I'll get over it. But the fact is, we know that Jason Light wants to make some changes. He should. They're a 4-12 team. They clearly weren't very good. There were problems all over the place. But the fact is, with these three offensive linemen, two of them don't really make sense to move on from. And the third one, which is Joseph, I'm not even sure that makes sense to move on from. You, like you said, you can't pay him the same as what he's getting paid, but there's no real reason to just cut him loose because you have the cap space to keep him. The Bucs are not up against it here. The Bucs are not their backs to the wall against the cap space asking Vincent Jackson to restructure his contract. They don't have to do that. They're not in that position, which is great, and which is giving you a lot of freedom to keep players and do what they need to do, which is get better on the front line and then also get much better on the second and third lines, which is basically just building depth behind the team. And that's a place where the draft comes in, because the draft, the Buccaneers do have, I believe, six or seven picks?
Officially right now it's only five, but it will be six once the comp picks are given out, as far as we're aware.
So that's what, all right, so it's probably six picks.
Yes.
They're going to have to make it happen with that first one. The first one, you have to hit.
Yes.
You cannot miss when you pick seventh. That's a simple fact. But then moving forward, the third round picks, the fourth round picks, as they move back, those are guys that you can find good players, and you have to make sure that you can get better with adding depth to this team. We're talking about linemen. That's a good spot to add depth. That's a good spot to bring in competition and see, can somebody beat out Davin Joseph? Can somebody take Carl Nix's spot if he's not healthy? Can somebody be the new Donald Penn? That's what they got to do. That should be the plan. And the combine, I think there's a lot of guys that have stood out. What has really stood out to you, specifically in linemen, at the combine thus far?
Well, the top three linemen at the combine all put on a show and definitely proved why they are the top three linemen. Greg Robinson of Auburn, Jake Matthews of Texas A&M, and Taylor Lewan of Michigan all had great weekends at the combine, and all look like they're the part. They are the left tackle. They're athletic enough. They're strong enough. They've got the technique. They all have their questions. Matthews isn't as dominant as you'd like, but he kind of does everything right. Lewan, there are some off-the-field questions about him. And Robinson never had to really pass block the way that you pass block in the NFL because Auburn doesn't run a real offense. But they all have all the tools. They're all there. They're consensus. All these guys are first-round picks. And so, like I was saying with Penn, if you want to bring in a guy, one of those guys with your seventh pick, if all the quarterbacks are gone, or you don't like any of the quarterbacks, or you don't want to add a defensive end there, or the defensive ends that you want are gone, I don't mind going left tackle, because having a 22-year-old left tackle who's going to play 10 years and be a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro all 10 years, you know, that's a super valuable thing to have. You don't have to worry about it. Not every team that has a good left tackle is good, but there are a lot of good teams that have good left tackles because it is an important position. The Bucs historically liked to run to the left. That may change under Jeff Tedford, but it's an important position for pass blocking. It can be a very important position in your run game. And having a guy like Greg Robinson, who is super young and still has a ton of potential and upside, that could be huge. You could have the next best left tackle in the NFL. And that's something that the Bucs are kind of stocking up on, guys who are among the best at their position. I don't feel like there's a lot of other guys in this draft who you can say are going to be the best at their position. I don't think any of these quarterbacks are going to be better than Andrew Luck. I don't think that any of the running backs are going to be better than Adrian Peterson or Jamal Charles or LeSean McCoy. I don't think any of the wide receivers are going to be better than Calvin Johnson. But I do think that Greg Robinson or Jake Matthews or Taylor Lewan could be better than Joe Staley or Joe Thomas or Tyron Smith or any of these other guys that you look at as a top left tackle. And so I don't mind that. My issue, and I don't want to harp on this too much because it just makes people mad. One of the reasons I don't want to take Sammy Watkins is because I don't think that he has the potential to be worth the seventh pick. I don't think he's a transcendent player. I think he is a good player who will never be a super great elite player. So taking him to in a position that is not a need doesn't make sense to me. I don't feel like left tackle is a need, but I'm also not going to be mad if they take one of these left tackles because I feel like they're all transcendent players potentially. And so with the right coaching and the right development, which the Bucs do have a very good offensive line coach now, I feel like they can get a lot out of these guys and turn them into Pro Bowlers, into all pros. So I feel like you have to take that. If that's what you're presented with and that's who you feel like is the best guy on the board at the seventh pick, I feel like you go with that and I'm extremely happy with it. Because then after the combine, you let go of Penn, you've got some cap space left over, you can sign a couple veterans, or you can just roll it over into next year. And then again, you've got room for depth, you've got cash for depth, and you can just keep rolling with it. Or you can restructure Penn's contract and keep him as a backup. Because, like you said, it never hurts to have backup, it never hurts to have depth. If a guy comes in and he beats Penn for his job, as long as Penn doesn't go mental and pull a Josh Freeman and just want out of town as soon as he loses his job, then keep him around, let him compete, let him be depth.
I'll tell you right now that everything you just said makes perfect sense, and that I have a hard time poking any holes in that logic. However, I'll tell you straight out, if the Buccaneers draft a left tackle at number 7, I'm going to be upset. Because I think they're close enough to being a good team that one extra player that can make a difference, can really make a difference and can really be a huge upgrade, which I don't think day one, no matter which one of those left tackles they bring in, I don't think they're going to be enough of an upgrade over Donald Penn. So for me, down the road, yeah, it may be the right pick and it might be good, but I don't know. I'm sick of losing and I'm sick of dealing with all the, we're consistently picking in the top 5. And the fact is they've done actually okay picking up there. Mainly Gerald McCoy is the one that sticks out the most, but to me, I want someone who's going to make a difference and going to make a difference soon. And obviously I've made it very clear I want a quarterback. I will absolutely be disappointed if there's not a quarterback selected at 7. I will tell you right now, if the Buccaneers do not pick a quarterback, there's going to be a certain level of disappointment in me. That's a fact. I don't like Mike Glennon. I don't think Mike Glennon's the answer. I don't think the Bucs are going to be able to go anywhere with Mike Glennon. There it is. I said it, done, period. So after quarterback, if they do decide to not go quarterback, my level of disappointment will clearly be there, but it will go much higher if they draft a left tackle. Because I just don't think it's enough of a need to use a 7th pick on. I'd rather see you move back, give somebody who does really want Greg Robinson that pick, get yourself a 2nd-round pick back, move back, I don't know, 5, 10, 15, even to the late 1st round, and find 2 players that you can have fill in making this team better going forward. I do not want to see a left tackle drafted at 7 because even though I think you're right, you might have a very good player. I just don't think it helps the team enough in 2014, a year that I think the Bucks are actually set up to do pretty well. Even if Mike Glennon's not very good, the defense is going to be excellent. They're going to be very, very good. They were good this year. They're going to be really good now that they have a coach who's not an idiot. Sorry, I just said it, but it is. So for me, drafting at 7, a left tackle, just I'm not going to be happy with it. Well, I think there's a better option, and moving back's a much better option.
Just real quick here then. I think that we both agree that we want a quarterback at 7.
Right.
We both like Teddy. I don't remember exactly how you feel about Bortles. I really like Bortles. I'm going to watch Carr in depth this week. I've been meaning to get around to it. His combine numbers impressed me. So I definitely want to look at him. But if the quarterback's not taken at 7, I think we both agree that this team will not reach its full potential without a different quarterback under center.
That's correct.
That said, Mike Glennon is capable of winning football games. He's not capable of being the guy who wins you football games, but you can win football games with Mike Glennon.
Let me interject. I think he's capable of not losing football games.
That's the better way to put it. Yes, absolutely. So with that in mind, I think then that left tackle would be a good thing to address in this draft, because you're going to want to rely on your running game more, and specifically with Greg Robinson, you don't get a better run-blocking left tackle. As much as you say that you don't think it's a big upgrade from day one, I do. I think that the minute that Greg Robinson steps into the NFL, he is a better run blocker than Donald Penn. He may not be a better pass blocker from day one, but that seems to be the declining part of Penn's game. Penn is still blocking the run well. He's not blocking the pass well anymore. So let's just say that even Robinson is a worse pass blocker. Does that stink with a guy like Glennon under center? Yes, that stinks with a guy like Glennon under center. But that was never going to be what won or lost football games for the Buccaneers, was Mike Glennon. It was going to be the defense and the running game and Glennon's ability to not screw up. And I feel like Glennon's still going to be able to not screw up, even with a slightly worse left tackle at the start. But I don't even think that's a given. I think that it's possible that if it's Matthews or Robinson or Luan, that from day one they're better than Donald Penn. I think that with Robinson in particular, from day one, you're going to get better run blocking. And if Carl Nix returns and you have Greg Robinson next to Carl Nix, Doug Martin's going to run for 1,500 yards because he's just going to get 5 yards a carry because they're just going to blow up the two guys in front of them every single play. And if you just get a capable right guard who can pull, or if you're going to a different system where they don't pull and it's just those two guys who have one-on-one matchups, that's huge. That's incredible. That's exactly what you want. And I think that Penn's capable. I think that Robinson could step in and be special as a run blocker right away, because that's what he did at Auburn. And it wasn't just that he was some mauler who just got the guy in front of him. Like, he can get to the next level. He can move around. He's athletic. He ran a sub 5 second 40, which doesn't sound like a lot, except that you realize, hey, it's an offensive lineman. That is actually kind of a big deal. Very athletic guy. He can jump. He can bench press. He can do all that stuff that just proves that he's athletic. He's got long arms. He's 332 pounds, and he plays tackle. Like, he's just a physical specimen that we don't have on the offensive line right now, except for in Nix. And to have them next to each other, I think that's such a huge upgrade. And like I started with, if they don't upgrade the quarterback, I don't think that you can do anything that's going to get this offense to a competitive level next year in terms of being a good offense. I don't think that adding even a defensive player is going to make the team that much better, to where if, as long as Mike Glennon is the quarterback, there's kind of a ceiling on what you can do. And that is, like, the best case scenario is that you have sort of a Trent Dilfer with the Ravens, Joe Flacco to a lesser extent with the Ravens situation, where you've got not the best quarterback, but if he just doesn't mess up and everything else goes well, you can compete. And I just don't think that even adding a Khalil Mack is that huge of a addition for a win now perspective. I think that Mack will be a great player too, but if you're talking about winning now, which I feel like the Bucks can do as well, I'm not sold that it's going to be super competitive, but I think that they can compete for a playoff spot next year. If Jeff Tedford's offense is good and things like that, there's some assumptions there, but I think that left tackle is just as much of a improve now, compete now, win now thing as much as it is a down the road thing.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to disagree, because I'm not going to argue too much more today. basically, what we do agree on is that hopefully A player not named Manziel that also plays quarterback position falls to number 7. And that the Bucks decide, yes, we do want to take Teddy Bridgewater. We're not going to be idiots like I think they might be if they get into that spot.
Well, they've already met with a couple of these quarterbacks, so they're at least doing their homework on them. So they won't be ill-prepared to take one of them. If they pass on them, it will be for good reason. They're not going to just ignore the position from a scouting perspective. So,
well, they're going to have to give me that good reason very, very clearly if I'm going to believe it. So that's all we have today. This has been the Pewter Plank Podcast, presented by the writers of thepewterplank.com. I'm Ken Bulkey, been here with Leo Howell, and we will see you next week.